This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires.
Swing and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And when they say friends, they mean it, because there's no Anthony Pepe tonight. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Matt McCarthy from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston filling in alongside Bobby Krivitsky from Basketball Insiders. What's going on, Bobby? How you doing tonight?
First time working together. Excited for it.
We'll see if you make it through the next 2 hours without wanting to strangle me.
I see no issues there. I think we'll be good.
I think we've got a lot to get into tonight. Stanley Cup Finals starting tonight. We've got the NBA playoffs continuing. Suns looking to close it out tonight. We got news from around the NBA. Got stuff from the baseball weekend going on. The New York Yankees are a dumpster fire. Hell, I don't know if you're a soccer guy. I was watching those Euro games today. Oh, my God, they were fantastic. We've got a lot to get into. Where do you want to start first? Like, where should we start first? I turn it over to you. We'll get into this a little bit later on. You have the pick of the litter, my friend.
So, as I've said a number of times on these airwaves, this is my favorite time on the sports calendar. This kind of wraps it up, but there's still a lot going on. They run through the tape. They don't walk to the end of the finish line.
So you're a fan of June compared to October? Because I think October is the best time on the sports calendar. I know you're a basketball guy, so
right.
You get the basketball playoffs here. But, like, in normal sports, you know, normal sports calendar, oh, you can't beat October. April's a close second. You got the Masters. You got all, you know, you got three sports going on, but you get the NFL, Major League Baseball playoffs, NBA, NHL starting up in October. October's the best time of the year. June, third or fourth.
So I cheat. I stretch it out to the start of the conference tournaments in NCAA basketball. So that includes.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
wait a minute.
Go this segment on the sports calendar.
Your favorite.
I don't just cut it off at June. This is the end of the finish line for me.
Hold on. You're saying your favorite time on the sports calendar is winter, spring, and summer.
That's right. Well, it's the end.
Oh, that's cheating.
Yes,
you can't
I cheat.
Do that.
I do.
Unbelievable. You're like Garrett
Steroids,
Cole.
Steroids, PEDs,
you're like Spider-Tech,
all of it.
You're like Garrett Cole. We'll get into him later on. It's the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Anthony Pepe is off tonight, so you get me, Matt McCarthy, from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, filling in Bobby Krivitsky alongside from Basketball Insiders. And you're a hoops guy, big time on the hoops calendar. What do you make of these conference finals? Why don't we just start with the game tonight? Suns and Clippers. Suns looking to close this out. Your take on this series so far?
I think the Suns are going to wrap it up tonight. It's a shame. This is another one of these series impacted by an injury to a star, obviously referring to Kawhi Leonard here. The Clippers, they could have won at least three of these games. You know, game one, They gave themselves a chance at the end. It wasn't quite what I consider a crosswalk comeback, which is, you know, when someone gives you that fake hustle to get across the road.
Sure.
So they legitimately had an opportunity to steal that game, but it was more so game two, Paul George chokes at the free throw line. They give up the valley-oop, if you will, to DeAndre Ayton. And on top of that, what doesn't get discussed enough, in my opinion, is they failed to get the rebound when Mikal Bridges missed the corner three in the first place to set up the alley-oop to Ayton. And then the last game was a rock fight. It was 84-80 in their own building. Paul George had 23 points on 20 shots. So that's really one where just no one on Los Angeles stepped up, and that's one you have to have if you're going to survive.
You buy any quit factor here with the Clippers? You know, you think about it, Kawhi, the injury and all that, you know, the way they've lost some of these games. You think there's a quit factor with this team tonight?
They've been resilient to this point in the postseason, consistently digging themselves into a hole and climbing out of it. This one, 3-1, is too much to overcome. I think at home, Phoenix, for my opinion, has had the most electric crowd in the postseason, and I fully expect them to finish the job tonight. Chris Paul Look, normally when players return from COVID, we've seen them take 2 weeks to rebuild their stamina and recapture their rhythm. But he's the type of veteran who I expect by now has had enough time that he'll be able to navigate around that.
It is kind of remarkable. You think about the NBA this year. These are different teams that we're seeing. You think this is good or bad for the league?
I think this is a positive because this postseason, one theme on a sour note has been the injuries. But other than that, we're seeing young burgeoning stars. Mm-hmm. Tatum dropped 50 against Brooklyn. Donovan Mitchell was fantastic. Ja Morant on down the line. Devin Booker's another guy. And so in this Final Four, you do have two top 10 markets. You've got an international star and a two-time MVP in Giannis. And Phoenix with Chris Paul, I think if he gets himself a ring, that's the best individual storyline of the postseason.
Sure. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been, you know, one of the, you know, star players in the NBA for, I mean, God, how many years now? Like 15? I mean,
he's
it feels
been
like
around.
He's been around. And he's been around, and he's been in many places too. He's been well traveled for, you know, a player of his quality. You think about how well traveled he is. This would be a good story for the NBA if Chris Paul were to get a title, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And so as they get into these new TV contracts, I think being able to showcase new teams, different storylines, and on top of it, like I said, these young stars who are the next wave in the NBA and the future of the league, as long as they can continue to get ratings, which they have to this point in the postseason, ratings are up compared to last year, for mm-hmm. instance, and that was when the pandemic was really in full throttle. I think it's a positive for the league what's happening right now.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm going to be distracted. You know, we got games on here at the Pepe compound.
I didn't expect that to be
Jack
the result.
Leiter just giving up a home run in the College World Series. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we'll be watching this. We got the game starting at 9 o'clock. We got the Cup final game here in the 8 o'clock hour on the East Coast. We got Lightning and the Canadiens. So, yeah, I'm going to be distracted. That's the best part about this job is you get to watch different stuff. You get to keep your eye on things. But in regards to the NBA, I mean, I just think it's so healthy for the league to have different teams, to have different storylines, because the storyline in the NBA really for the last 10 plus years has been, of course, LeBron. But it's been the super teams, whether it be the Heat or, you know, the Golden State Warriors, or, I mean, it's just, it's become too predictable. The league had become too predictable. This is a good thing for the NBA. This Final Four that you never in your wildest dreams would have predicted, this Final Four, this is a damn good thing for the NBA.
And what's so interesting is that, like you said, there's been years where going into the campaign, we knew who would be in the finals. It was going to be Durant's Warriors against mm-hmm. LeBron's Cavs. But now there's more parity than ever. And it happens to come when people, including in the league, are very concerned that stars are only taking their talents to a select few markets. But like I said, there was about 7 or 8 teams that had legitimate championship aspirations this season. And there are some other markets like Atlanta, like Washington, D.C., that have the trappings to be able to attract the best players in the game. Phoenix is another one. As soon as Chris Paul's contract is mm-hmm. up, big name players will look to align themselves with Devin Booker.
Absolutely. I mean, that's you know, you want to talk about the next potential super team landing spot. That's a really good spot. You know, it's a really good point that you make. I will just say, though, is this a 1 or a 2 year thing? You know, last year with the COVID bubble, you see the Heat get there. The Heat were never supposed to be there. This year, there have been so many injuries to star players, which LeBron, of course, has blamed on the short layoff from the COVID year and all that. Like, is this just a one-off? Like, are we going to be talking about this? And we say, oh, it's great for the league. There are these different markets and different teams in there. But is this going to be a one-off year where, you know, next year it's going to be Brooklyn and the next super team out west, and for the next 5 years, it's going to be those teams in the final? Like, you have to admit that's a possibility.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if next year course corrects, it's going to be Brooklyn and the Lakers, which yep. is what we probably should have gotten this year. That was the finals I anticipated going into the playoffs, and what derailed it was injuries, not all of them a product of a season that was even more condensed than usual. And so I think what's going to happen is that at some point, a lot of these big twos, not all of them are going to work. It's going to lead to at least one or two big threes forming like Brooklyn got. And so what's going to happen is luckily these tend to only last in 4-year windows. So I don't think it's the end of the super team era by any means. But as we saw this year, it's unpredictable. So let's just see how it actually plays out, even though we have two favorites in mind from each conference.
So when you look at the Eastern Conference, to me, the story for the rest of these playoffs is Giannis and the Bucks, because this feels like their chance. Next year, Brooklyn's going to be healthy again. They'll get that figured out. I don't think they're on that, you know, the level of the Nets. I mean, you see, frankly, you know, Brooklyn just had Kevin Durant in that second round series. I know Harden was out there, but it was clear he was hobbled. It was clear he was hurt. And man, it was a dogfight. They had to get through.
If he wore a size 17, right, they'd be in the finals.
They'd be in the finals. So this, to me, is the chance for the Milwaukee Bucks. They might not get another chance with just the landscape of the league, the landscape of the Eastern Conference. Is that a fair assessment? Is this make or break, or, you know, just, you know, boom or bust for the Milwaukee Bucks this year?
Absolutely. They're locked in to Jrue Holiday. They gave up the picks to get him. They rewarded him with the contract. This is their team. The person who holds them back the most is their head coach. But Bud, he might not go anywhere just off of this, even though he really had the least to do with it. They get to the finals alone. That probably stamps his return. They win it. He's definitely not getting fired off the duck boat. And so I think that what happens here with Milwaukee is that they have a legitimate big three, but limited roster flexibility. So what they needed was the stars to align, and they have. If they can't get it done this year, it's just never going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's such a good point. I mean, as you said, the stars have a line for them. If they miss out on this, it's hard to see them getting back to this spot because we know there are limitations there. I mean, Giannis, as spectacular a player as he is limited. Then you're talking about Holiday and Middleton. It just does not compare to what the Nets can do. It just does not compare to what the Lakers could do if they get a third star there. It is what it is for the Milwaukee Bucks. This is their chance. And now with Trae Young dealing with this ankle injury, talk about, really, this is your chance. Like, you should get to the finals, and to me, you should win it. I think they're the best team remaining of the four. You could make an argument for Phoenix. I would make an argument for Milwaukee. I would.
Yeah, I think that this is the basketball gods pushing the Bucks towards the title. And Milwaukee, they almost blew it against Brooklyn twice, actually. Game five, they should have won, and they were complicit in Kevin Durant having this amazing performance that shouldn't have ended in a W, but it did in large part because of what the Bucks were doing. And then in Game 7, we talked about KD's foot on the line and all that. They have to get this done now. There's no excuse. As far as them against Phoenix, which in all likelihood is going to be what happens in the finals, I think it's really close between those two. And I know that a lot of people are on the side of Milwaukee. I look at the Suns as a more dynamic team. Some people think that they'll have a Giannis problem. Who doesn't? But I like the idea of being able to throw multiple big wings at him and give DeAndre Ayton a chance. He held his own against a healthy Anthony Davis in the first round. He played Nikola Jokic, the MVP, to a wash. He's done well and forced the Clippers to go away from their small ball lineups, which have been working so effectively for them. So I think the Suns have multiple options that are at least worth trotting out to throw at Giannis over the course of the finals. I think that Phoenix is dynamic on both ends of the floor.
We'll get to, you know, that potential matchup in the finals in a second. So it sounds to me that you think Atlanta's in for a world of hurt here.
Yeah, and it's funny because about halfway through the fourth quarter, I'm thinking, wow, they look poised to go up 2-1 here, and can they pull it off? And the building was rocking, and from there, they fell in love with the three. They took eight threes in the final frame. They took 18 shots total. They went 1-for-8 from beyond the arc. I thought that more than anything killed them. Obviously, Trae Young's injury, a major factor. He went from scoring 32 points in three quarters to only three in the fourth, and obviously he had to sit for part of it at the start. So that was huge as well. But more than anything, it was the bad shot selection. And that way, Chris Middleton, who was hot as a pistol, he was able to just constantly get the ball back even quicker and put 20 points up in the final frame to get the win.
All right, putting a lot of NBA thoughts on the board. You can't be talking NBA at this time without talking about Damian Lillard and all the reports coming out of Portland. We will get into that next. Matt McCarthy, Bobby Krivitsky. It is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Bobby Krivitsky is alongside tonight with me. Matt McCarthy just said the flute game is strong with that rejoin. It absolutely is.
AC always kills the rejoins.
Oh, of course he does, because that's who he is. He's a legend. Andrew Carlson back on rock and roll control, as Pepe would say, back in Houston. Joining us tonight on the Sports Map Radio Network, this is the Diehards, McCarthy and Krivitsky. Talking some NBA with you, Damian Lillard. This does not sound like this is going well in Portland, eh, Bobby?
No, and I wrote about this, but even the most casual of NBA fans could figure out that if they botch the hiring process, then it could very well be the straw that breaks the camel's back, if you will, and causes Lillard to say, it's time for me to go. And I think that's exactly what's happened. Chris Haynes from Yahoo Sports is very well connected to both the player and the franchise. So when he puts out there that he's thinking of leaving, personally, I thought it was a cheap shot and disingenuous for him to cite the backlash he's getting from fans because the two guys that he supported were Jason Kidd and Chauncey Billups. A bunch of mean tweets from whatever percentage of the Blazers fan base is not why he wants to go.
No.
So I don't like the idea of throwing rocks back at them, but clearly, you know, that bothered him a little bit. And so I look at this situation, and if you're Damian Lillard, you need to decide, do I want to go win a ring, or do I want to be the guy who the entire franchise revolves around and spend my entire career in one jersey? And it just seems like it's starting to point towards him plotting his exit.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it doesn't really feel like things are trending in the right direction with Portland, just overall in their ability to win a title. And, you know, the NBA has been as wide open as it's been, you know, in a long time for the last 2 years. And the Trailblazers haven't really found themselves in the mix. So I can understand why he's thinking. You want to talk about a guy who's probably been more loyal than the vast majority of NBA players. Damian Lillard, he is going to be 31. You know, he's been in Portland a while. He's been a really good player in Portland for a long time. He's been the face of that franchise for a long time. It does feel like this is trending towards a breakup. How do you see, I mean, will the Blazers allow this to happen? Because obviously, generally, when guys force their way out in the NBA, they get their way. Do you see that going this way this time?
Yeah, he's not going to go James Harden and show up from the buffet to the tip, you know, the
show up in
line.
The fat suit or in, you know, the real fat.
I don't know how much embellishing James Harden needed.
I don't think so.
Damian Lillard, I think that his version of going scorched earth is more through the media. And so I just think that the Blazers know. And then it becomes a question of, you know, teams are so PR conscious these days, rightfully so, that do they send him to the location that he wants to go, maybe a second choice, even if the return's not as good as some of the other offers on the table? So when I look at the best landing spot for Dame, it's the Lakers. Mm-hmm. But they have one of the worst packages that any franchise can put together. So more realistic would be the Celtics, if they're willing to offer Jaylen Brown, and we can get into the should they or shouldn't they aspect of this. The Sixers with Ben Simmons, and we can talk about his trade value. The Rockets, AC, I think you should be excited that if Dame goes out, you've got 8 first-round picks that you added from Brooklyn, the number 2 selection in this year's draft, and another one. I don't know if Dame's willing to go to New Orleans, but I think that him and Zion is a possibility for a title-contending tandem.
When you talk about, oftentimes in the NBA, bringing in a superstar player is the most important thing you can do because it's going to help recruit other superstar players. Lillard strikes me as the type of guy who commands so much respect around the NBA that he is the biggest fish that you could bring in this offseason, because a year from now, 2 years from now, there are going to be guys who say, I want to play with Dame.
Exactly. So that's why the Knicks, who could also clear out the future cap space to add a second star, I'm not enticed by a package of RJ Barrett and picks. But again, if that's his first choice and the Blazers want to play the PR game, there's enough first-round selections on the table. That deal could get done. It's realistic. And then, like you said, Dame will recruit someone to join him in the Big Apple. It's the same for some other markets. So I certainly think that there's that aspect of teams who say, maybe we're not a title contender right now, but let's convey to Damian that we do have the situation lined up. We can add a second star with you. Just give us a season.
Why would the Blazers play the PR game? I understand that it's important, but like, you never want to be the team trading the star player in the NBA because you never get full value on the dollar. You're getting 60, 70 cents on the dollar. We know that. Why would they take 40 or 50 cents on the dollar just to play the PR game? He wants to get out of there. If you make that happen, isn't that playing the PR game enough? Like, that's how I would feel if I'm the Blazers. Like, you want to get out of here? Okay, we'll send you out of here, but we're going to take the best deal available.
So that's my mentality as well. It would be short-sighted, but I'm not the biggest fan of Neil Olshey to begin with. He's made some bad deals in his past. And so if he feels like akin to Sam Presti's done it on a much smaller scale, but he hasn't always taken the best return in order to send Chris Paul to Phoenix where he wanted to go,
sure,
Al Horford back to Boston. So if Neil Olshey looks at it like that, it might be a mistake, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't do it.
Let's talk landing spots. Where is the best landing spot for Lillard and why? You say it's the Lakers. I agree. just based on the fact that, my God, what a three-headed monster that would be. That's a title right there. You're better than Brooklyn. You've got the best 1-2-3 in the NBA. Not to mention a big man, a wing, a guard. I mean, that is that's a force to be reckoned with. Does that happen, though?
I don't think they have the package. And even if Neil O'Shea wants to play the PR game, it's just way too weak of an offer. They gave up their first-round picks to get Anthony Davis. Kyle Kuzma has not been impressive, so I don't see them having an offer. I just think it's unrealistic, even though it's the best landing spot for Lillard. So like I said, I would put at the top of my board the Celtics, the Sixers, the Rockets, and the Pelicans.
Okay, so of those four teams, who do you think is most likely to land him?
I think it's the Sixers, and that NBA Twitter will have a meltdown because we've spent the last week or so dumping all over Ben Simmons' trade value.
Rightfully so.
And what? Yeah, he certainly brought this on himself with a lack of willingness to work on his game. And look, in the fourth quarter of the last four games against Atlanta, he took as many shots as you and I. So he needs to be better than that, and we'll see what happens moving forward. You never know when that turning point comes in a player's career on something like this. Sometimes we really get tunnel vision and we just react to what's happening in the moment. But nonetheless, I do think that Simmons and Thibault and Maxey and some picks could easily end up being the best offer Portland has.
Is that better than what the Celtics could offer if the Celtics are offering Jaylen Brown? And we don't know if the Celtics are going to be willing to offer Jaylen Brown. I can pretty much guarantee you the Sixers are willing to offer Ben Simmons. There's no doubt about that. They're getting Dame to pair with Embiid. Like, that's a no-brainer. The Celtics, that's a much different story. Are they going to be willing to offer Jaylen Brown in that deal? And if they are, I'm sorry, isn't that better than what the Sixers would be offering, given Ben Simmons? Is it like, I would much rather have Jaylen Brown than Ben Simmons, but yeah. Am I crazy?
No, if Jaylen Brown's on the table, I think that deal gets done. It's certainly better than a Ben Simmons-centered package, in my opinion, at least. We're on the same page there. And so I look at that as the Celtics needing to weigh out a few different things, and one of them is PR-related, but we'll start with the fact that in a league that's driven by wing players, you're trading a 24-year-old all-star who right now, it's fair to ask the question, it's open-ended, can Jaylen Brown be the second-best player on a title team? He's a two-way wing. To give him up for an undersized point guard in his 30s, who on the court, we're certainly the leadership aspect with Dame, but on the court, he gives you one thing, and as valuable as buckets are, he is one-dimensional.
Sure.
They've seen what happened with Kyrie from a durability standpoint, Isaiah Thomas, Kemba Walker.
Yep.
It's a huge risk if they're willing to make that deal.
It's a massive, massive risk, and a risk that if you're the Celtics, you probably don't necessarily want to take on. But here's the argument for it, is that you bring in Damian Lillard and you pair him with Jason Tatum. You're the second best team in the Eastern Conference right there. To me, no doubt. I like Jaylen Brown as a player a lot, but you pair Lillard and Tatum, that's a force to be reckoned with. And when you talk about recruiting, it's the most important thing. Lillard and Tatum, well, then all of a sudden that becomes one of the top spots for a third NBA superstar. When they're looking around in a year or two, they're going to say, I want to end up in Boston. I want to go where those guys are because we're going to win a title. Because that, I mean, that's a lot of talent right there for sure. I mean, if the Celtics were to do that, again, I think they'd become the second best team in the Eastern Conference. But are they willing to do that given the risk that comes on with taking on a player who's 31, undersized, and is a guard? It's just, it's a really, really fair question. It would be a tough call for them, for sure.
In your opinion, if the Celtics were willing to trade with Jaylen Brown, would you rather have Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal?
I love Damian Lillard. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA. Probably Bradley Beal, though. He's, what, 4 years younger? 3 years younger? He's Tatum's boy. That's what we're probably talking about here. Now, I think the Celtics should make either one of those trades if they present themselves. Because, again, the most important thing is to make yourself a destination for that third superstar in a year or two. Celtics are, you know, trying to clear room, what, for the offseason of 22, which is going to be a huge NBA offseason. That's ultimately, I think, the decision that they need to make. And it's going to hurt to give up a 24 your old player in Jaylen Brown, who's an all-star already and is a two-way wing, but they're in a position where they have to take a risk. I think that makes the most sense for them. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. We'll continue the NBA discussion next with you.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Anthony Pepe is off tonight. It's Matt McCarthy and Bobby Krivitsky in on the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. You can tweet at me, at MattMcCarthy985. Where can people find it's just at Bobby Krivitsky, right?
That's correct.
Easy enough. And how do people spell that?
K-R-I, V as in Victor, I-T, S-K-Y.
Just the way it sounds. We're doing a lot of NBA. We've been heavy NBA so far today. Ime Udoka, officially introduced as the head coach of the Boston Celtics. What'd you make of that introductory press conference?
I thought he hit all the right notes, from talking about how he had a lot to do with Kawhi Leonard's development early on in his career with the Spurs. And one of the messages he revealed today that he used to tell Leonard is, what are you waiting for? Go get it. And by no means are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown the type who have been passive or patient, but it is one of those motivational tools that I think is going to help spark them, especially this offseason. I think this is a hungry group after underachieving. So that was one of those messages Udoka hit on that you love to hear if you're a Celtics fan.
So the Celtics were essentially the first team to strike when it comes to hiring a head coach this offseason. They were the first team to have an opening, really. When Brad Stevens got promoted or moved upwards, however you want to put it. There is something interesting going on with Danny Ainge. Doesn't sound like he's retiring. So all of a sudden that whole retirement press conference looks much more like a you got fired press conference. But the Celtics struck quickly and they got Ime Udoka. Do you think he was always their first choice?
Yes. I think that the Jays and Marcus Smart had familiarity with him from their time together at the FIBA World Cup two summers ago. I think that Brad Stevens, through the Greg Popovich connection, knows Udoka. So I do think that this is someone who I think they closed on their first choice. He was a popular candidate, and it sounds like he wants to be here because of the situation with Tatum and Brown moving forward. Obviously, we just talked about the potential of a Jaylen Brown trade, but he repeated constantly today at the press conference that the ability to move forward with two young wings, one looks like a future MVP candidate, is very enticing and why he wanted to come to Boston.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the Celtics were the most desirable opening this offseason. You look at a place like Portland, you say, oh, I'm going to go coach Damian Lillard. No, wait, never mind. He wants out. You know, the Celtics do have, you know, the two wings under the age of 24, you know, for at least the time being. They're both under contract. We know that that doesn't always matter in the NBA. When guys decide they want out, they want out, and they generally get out. But the Celtics do have that going for them. How much change do you anticipate for the Celtics franchise this offseason? Is Ime Udoka essentially going to be taking over the same team that Brad Stevens had last year, or is this going to be a different group?
No, I think by and large it's going to be the same. They made the Horford for Walker swap. They're going to re-sign Evan Fournier, presumably. And from there, they don't have that many options at their disposal. They've got the taxpayer mid-level exception. Mm-hmm. They've got some trade exceptions if they want to go to work with those. They traded their first-round pick in the Kemba deal. So that's why one of the themes that Udoka hit on at this press conference is expediting the development of their recent first-round picks, guys like Nesmith and Langford. We'll see about Grant Williams, whether or not he's on the roster. Peyton Pritchard's another one. So I think, by and large, it's the same group. They're just looking to get more out of them.
Well, does it feel like the Celtics underachieved this year? Because you look at the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think anybody would have predicted that Atlanta would be there. Of course, we got the game coming up tonight out west in the NBA with a 9 o'clock tip there, at least on the East Coast. Does it feel like the Celtics underachieved, given the fact that, yeah, they're, you know, not as talented as they were, say, in 2018 and 19 with Hayward and Irving and Horford and a young Brown, a young Tatum, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier? I mean, it's striking, you know, the talent, you know, disparity and the talent difference between two or three years ago for the Celtics and the team that you have now. But were they better than a 7 seed?
Yes and no. I think the Celtics got dealt a really rough hand, and the whole league did. The whole world did. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, the Celtics missed more games due to COVID than any other team in the NBA.
And whose fault is that? The Celtics.
I don't know the circumstances in which some of those individuals contracted it.
How about Tristan Thompson?
So, I would actually, Jason Tatum got it presumably from Bradley Beal on a night where if the league had been more responsible, the Wizards should not have been active. So you can really blame the NBA for that one. If you want to say that Tatum is close enough to Beal that he should have been aware of the situation and not been so buddy-buddy with him. But that's what they do every single game, every single post-game, every single pre-game. So I think that the league is culpable in that one as well. You want to tell me Tristan Thompson's out partying and that's not cool? Sure, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But not every single instance was strictly on even the individual's fault.
Sure, I get that. I understand that. But I guess the whole COVID year thing, I don't really buy that excuse with the Celtics or with anybody, by the way. Everybody had to deal with it. If it affected you a little bit more, you still shouldn't be the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, you know, there's no way the Celtics, with their talent in Brown and Tatum, and I know they didn't have Kemba for a lot of the year and that, you know, the rest of that roster is really barren. Those two players, if you have two all-stars in the NBA, you should be a little bit better than seventh in the Eastern Conference. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure, but keep in mind that this year, because of the nature of it, most of the league was pulled to around 500, and the Celtics, their issue, and this is their fault for sure, and especially Danny Ainge in the front office, it wasn't the issue of why are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown underachieving. It was, look at what's around them. They're relying on Jeff Teague for a large extent of the season. Tristan Thompson was dealing with COVID again, and he was rusty to start the campaign. Too many young, unreliable, inconsistent rotation members. The team just wasn't good enough for much of the season. They finally got better shortly after the deadline with Fournier and Nesmith emerging, but Fournier missed time because of COVID. So I also think that they did get dealt a bad hand on top of the issues that they created themselves.
Sure. Well, just looking around the Eastern Conference, you know, we get news today that Ben Simmons is not going to participate for Team Australia. That had been reported maybe about a week and a half ago, immediately after the Sixers were bounced in the Eastern Conference second round. We get the official word today. He is not going to be participating with Team Australia at the Olympics. He's going to be working on his game instead. You buy any of that? Is that just kind of a PR spin? What do you make of that whole situation?
Well, it's not like he didn't get an invite to Team Australia. He'd still be the best player on the roster. I think that this is what he's doing. Look, Kobe Bryant used to say that he wasn't even about scrimmaging and going to these pickup games with other NBA players. He wanted to get all the shots in the offseason rather than divide them. And that's what Ben Simmons needs right now. No, he's not Kobe by any stretch and certainly doesn't share his Mamba mentality. But still, Ben Simmons needs all of the shots. He can't be sharing them. He can't be in that type of environment. It wouldn't be as beneficial as what I believe he's going to do. But we'll just see now. He has to be comfortable failing and being a 33-34% three-point shooter. He has to be comfortable with the idea of going to the line as someone who's very inconsistent from the stripe. And if he's not, look, that's one of the separators between him and Giannis, is that Giannis, and there was a great video the other day of him at practice talking about he's failed on the biggest stage.
Sure.
He's airballed back-to-back free throws, game seven, you name it. Ben Simmons has to be comfortable with the idea that he might fail and he's not going to be a good three-point shooter, but it's such a detriment to your team if you won't even take it.
What's his trade value?
I think it all depends on what you're trying to get. So, for example, if Bradley Beal comes on the market...
How about like a bag of basketballs? You trying to get a bag of basketballs?
Well, so if Bradley Beal's on the market and the Celtics say, we want to hold on to Jaylen Brown, then all of a sudden a Ben Simmons-centered package, that could be the best offer on the table. You know, probably comes down to something like him, Houston's picks, Brandon Ingram in a couple of draft selections. Or you're looking at a scenario where I think it would be a huge mistake for Philly, but if they settle for C.J. McCollum, who's another undersized 30-year-old guard that only gives you buckets, I think it would be a huge mistake. But we could be talking about a deal like that, which goes to show that his value is higher than NBA Twitter wants to make it seem like right now. There's a reason teams are inquiring around the league. Hey, is Ben Simmons available? Are you willing to deal him? I don't see how he comes back, though. I think the experiment is over. The results are definitive. But his trade value, I believe, is higher than people on the outside perceive.
The contract, though. I mean, the contract is a serious issue there. I mean, he's not a max player. I mean, you can, you know, if, for example, if the Celtics want to move on from a Marcus Smart, you can get a guy like Marcus Smart who's going to defend and distribute. He'll shoot more than he should, whereas Ben Simmons doesn't shoot as much as he should. That's the difference in that player. But you can say, hold on, I can get Marcus Smart for what's he making, $13 million a year, something like that, whereas Ben Simmons is making significantly more than that. How much does the contract appreciate his value?
Oh, it definitely hurts it, for sure. Like you said, if you're looking from how do I build a team with the best value at each spot, then by all means, Ben Simmons, not everyone who has a max contract is who we would consider worthy of having one. He's certainly not to this point, despite having an all-NBA selection under his belt and a few All-Star games to go with it. But to me, Ben Simmons, the biggest thing determining his future value is how other franchises view him positionally. He's not a point guard. He's just not. A lot of people say, plug him in at the four. But to me, he needs to play at the five, which he can do in the modern NBA. He's 6'10". Yep. He's a pretty big guy in terms of strength. And so surround him with four shooters. Let him operate offensively like a point guard with the ball in his hands. But defensively, he needs to be at the five, which makes it easier to space the floor when they come back down the other end.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. You did mention him in a potential trade for Bradley Beal. This is going to be one of the key NBA dominoes to fall this summer, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think those are the two big names to keep an eye on. Damian Lillard. Maybe these are more threatening, trying to pressure the organization, but they'll already capitulate to him. He already had an article during the season using Chris Haynes once again as his mouthpiece to say he's starting to regret not applying more pressure to the organization. So maybe he's still on that warpath and ultimately wants to stay in Portland, play for one franchise like I talked about earlier. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he wants a ring and it's time for him to pack his bags and get out of Portland. And with Bradley Beal, there's no way to know. He's another one who's very loyal. He's very close with Damian Lillard, who's often told him to stay in D.C. It is an area, like I said, that if they were to get their situation straightened out, and finally they got rid of Ernie Grunfeld, Tommy Shepard's a very impressive guy to be leading your front office. If they get it straightened out and organized, they might be attracting Jason Tatum in a few years, not the other way around. So with Bradley Beal, it's just a question of, does he want to stay and stick it out when they're not going to be particularly impressive next season? And sign that extension now. And if not, even if he doesn't tell the Wizards, I'm definitively leaving, I just want to get to the market, I don't think you can risk it. I think you have to trade him at that point.
Where's the most logical landing spot for Beal if he goes? And as you mentioned,
you know the answer.
Boston Celtics.
Absolutely. I think at that point, it might come back to hurt them to trade Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal, especially if it doesn't work out with Beal and Tatum. I don't consider that a lock for a title contender, certainly not the best team in the East if Brooklyn's healthy, and maybe they don't even get through Milwaukee. And so, to me, it's a huge risk that the experiment goes wrong and both of them end up leaving in about 4 years after you've acquired Beal. So it's a huge risk, just like with a Lillard trade, but nonetheless, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Beal's on the table and so is Jaylen Brown.
Are the Celtics better if they have Tatum and Lillard or Tatum and Beal?
I think it's a wing-oriented game. We've seen that underage guards don't age gracefully, and so I would be very leery of that. Even like you said, the idea, bring in Damian Lillard, try to carve out max cap space, and hope that him and Tatum, with Ime Udoka as well, can recruit that third star. Now you've got your championship team, but maybe Lillard doesn't age gracefully in this one stopgap of a season, so I'd feel more comfortable with Bradley Beal.
Are there any guarantees that Tatum and Beal, whether it's Boston, whether it's Washington, whether it's somewhere else, if they meet somewhere eventually, we know they're boys. You know, they've known each other for a long time. They're close. They're good friends. Is that like a guaranteed, like slam dunk? Like you've got your first two pieces, you need a third, and you're going to win a championship thing? Like, for whatever reason, I've never really gotten that sense. I mean, I think Bradley Beal's a really good player. I think Jason Tatum's a really good player. Is that a winning combination?
No, I think you would need a strong third banana. I don't think their games complement each other.
Right.
What we've seen repeatedly is that when stars want to play together, they make it work. You could have made the case that how is Durant, Harden, and Kyrie going to work? There's only one basketball to go around. So Jason Tatum, who's improving as a playmaker, Bradley Beal, who probably wants to dump some of the scoring load and that responsibility off his plate, make it work. But their games don't naturally complement each other. Beal's never shown much on the defensive end, so they would need a strong third option next to them.
All right, this is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. We got basically an hour down. Got another hour to go. How about that? Bobby has not strangled me yet. It's Matt McCarthy, Bobby Krivitsky, in for Anthony Pepe tonight.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Got some baseball I want to get to in the next hour. Also, thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final and anything else, really. It's one of those nights. This is the Die Hards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Matt McCarthy and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. But the most important question of the night, did you see this picture of this bear on the beach in California? Did you see this?
I'm about to pull it up on Twitter. I have not.
Check it out. This bear got really close to the lake. So it brought the most important question of our time back at it. Would you rather encounter a shark or a bear? Now that the bear was so close to the shark's home, I feel like we're melding the worlds. Which would you least want to encounter in an attack, a bear or a shark? Go.
I'd least want to encounter a shark because I'm not going to outswim it. Like, you're not going to outrun a bear either. But some bears, they've gotten more comfortable around humans, which can be a very big concern. With sharks, you're dead in the water. It's just up to what the animal wants to do.
That's right. Well, it's just up to what the bear wants to do, and that's why you don't want to encounter the bear. The shark really doesn't want to eat you. The shark just thinks you're a seal. The shark will do a little test bite.
How easily it can get confused and think you're a seal.
Well, yes, because it's not the brightest creatures, I guess. They keep eating humans. I'm telling you, the shark, it'll just take a little nibble out of your tuchus. Well, it'll decide, I don't want this. You just better hope it grabs your tuchus instead of your leg and a bad artery and you bleed out and all that. That won't be good. You don't want to encounter the bear, though. That thing will rip you from limb to limb. The shark doesn't want to rip you from limb to limb.
I think sharks have developed an increasing taste for human flesh. I'd be concerned.
Either way, just don't go into the water. It's really that simple. The bear could walk in right now to our studio. The shark, it's not coming here. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.